In this lecture, I would like to look at specific themes that we see in the prologue, theme, theme potter, and theme sequence of The Rule of the Master. And if you would follow along on the text before you, we'll be dropping down and moving rather quickly through it. Let me say a little word about the conventions I've adopted in this text. Occasionally you'll see a very dark area, blue or purple or red, with white writing in it. Those are always my own comments. They are not part of the text itself. So let's begin with the prologue at the very beginning of the Master's Rule. Notice that very quickly, within the very first verse, he says, "Release everything else you are thinking and know that as I speak to you, God is instructing you through my mouth." This is a theme that recurs throughout the rule. It could be seen in a positive sense as a kind of immanent Christology, that we really do hear the voice of Christ in others, but it could also be seen in a more negative way as an extremely authoritarian approach to Christian spiritual practice and spiritual growth, namely that you receive it exclusively at the hands of a designated superior who is always Christ's voice for you, no matter what. And that certainly is the Master's approach. He is to be regarded, as he calls himself, as the Master, which means the teacher, the one who teaches in what he will call at the very end of these introductory segments, the school of the Lord's service. For him, the school of the Lord's service is the place in which you enter and listen to the words of the Master. As we'll see, for Benedict, the school of the Lord's service certainly includes the important role of the abbot, but it as importantly includes the notion of community itself, the relationship between the brethren. The Master's approach from this very first verse is very individual, the individual within the community having a relationship of obedience to the superior. Dropping down to verse 8, you'll notice that there is highlighted text. He mentions three roads that cross in your heart. The Master is, on the one hand, very beautifully employing the ancient Christian notion of the two ways, and here he's making it the three ways, which we find in the earliest Christian literature, in the Didache, in many early texts, in the letter of Barnabas, and so on, in which there is a way of light and a way of darkness. This is a model that Christianity inherited from Judaism. The Master has described three paths of which you only choose one. The one you clearly leave behind, as we see in verse 9, is that of sinful ignorance. But then you have two more lying before you. These two include obedience to the precepts. And as we'll see, these two possible ways are life in the world, in secular society as a Christian on the one hand, and life in the monastery on the other. And for the Master, unfortunately, from our perspective, the way of the monastery is the way that assures salvation. In fact, for him, it's the only way of assuring salvation, which again is a rather dark and exclusive model of this form of Christian obedience. That is made clear in verses 12 to 14. We don't take the one that is the one on the left, which is wide and leads to perdition. And remember, this is not the way of sinfulness. This is the second of the three ways. This is the way of people living in the world. The right way or the right path is the narrow one that brings loving servants to the Lord. And so if we drop down now to the theme, we discover, and that's below the section that's marked with blue, we discover in the theme two beautiful images. The one is the idea of the spring, which is baptism, the source of our salvation and life. And the second is the idea of accepting the yoke of Christ, which he calls initially a contrast between the yoke of terrible wandering pilgrimage in the world in verse 4, which he says carries with it the sins of negligence. It's something which makes us weary from the weight that it entails. And it involves all sorts of negative things. Then in verse 8, we hear a voice, we see this spring, this fonts of living water, and Christ speaking to us through the water says, "All who are thirsty, come and drink. Come to this water, all you who are labor and burdened, and I will give you rest." So we are invited to assume the yoke of Christ, which is the consequence of baptism, to live according to the gospel, but for the master, that means living according to the specific way of life of the monastery. Now he does say, quoting Christ in verse 15, that the yoke is easy and the burden is light. But as we'll see, there continues to remain a very dark strand of unquestioning obedience and even of accepting suffering, as he'll call it, participation in the passion of Christ, as the predominant experience of life in this school. Now he goes on, if we drop down to verse 21, that taking on this yoke, letting go of the old baggage of sin, means that we must separate ourselves from those who are heedless on this world's road. So for him, Christian perfection, Christian spiritual discipline, means leaving the world, entering a monastic life. As we drop down further, past the little red bar to the theme Potter, which is the commentary on the Our Father, this is a very beautiful incorporation into this model of Christian spiritual growth of the ancient idea of the Our Father being at the center of Christian faith. But as we'll see, for him there is a rather darker underlying theme as he interprets the Lord's Prayer that has to do with the rejection not only of the world itself, but of those who live in the world. If we drop in the theme Potter to what he says in verse 1, he says, "It is right that we leave our earthly father and mother according to the flesh." For we are supposed to abandon parents according to the flesh. And then, appropriately, in a dark passage, I've quoted his description of descent from paradise to the womb, from the womb to womb to the world, and from the world into hell. And then that parallels a model of ascent, which is immediately below it. We're born through baptism, restored by the tree of the cross, and so we rise again, readmitted to paradise from which we had freely willed we had fallen. This, unfortunately, again, is a kind of notion of complete separation in which Christian spiritual progress entails separation from what is defined as the world, as secular society, even if it's Christian society living in the world, and also of one's own kindred, one's own family members. The Master is not unique in this. This becomes thematic in religious life in both the East and the West, and has only in recent times been relatively and significantly modified. Let's drop down now to verse 19 of this theme Potter, this comment, commentary on the Lord's Prayer. He describes the dread judgment to come. And then in verse 24, in interpreting "Thy will be done," he modifies it by describing in verses 32 and 33, if we drop down, that, as you might put it, the judged will become judges themselves. If we submit now in obedience, somehow we will eventually even become the judges of angels. So you have a kind of a, and I would call it rather dark motivation for Christian spiritual progress. You submit to fearful judgment now. You live in fear and terror of judgment, so that one day you might yourself, as it were, become a judge of other, even higher forms of spiritual life. And now dropping considerably further down to the theme sequence, I only want to say very briefly here that this is, as we mentioned before, a commentary on Psalms 33 or 34 and Psalms 14 or 15, which is a very beautiful use of the Psalter in Christian catechesis and an incorporation of it into a model of Christian spiritual growth. And we'll look at this in more detail because this is above all the section of the Master's introduction which Benedict uses most completely and quotes most literally. But let's drop down to the very bottom of this introduction to verses 45 and 46. The Master is going to establish a school of the Lord's service. This is for him what the monastery is, a place where you come to learn from Christ, Christ speaking through the words of the Master, that is, through the abbot. His definition of the school is a place where we by patience share in the sufferings of Christ so as to become co-heirs of Christ in his kingdom. That's in verse 46 of this theme sequence, this conclusion to his introduction. So for the Master, The school is a place where we must be prepared to participate in the sufferings of Christ. Even though he speaks of a light burden, in fact, it would seem that the burden of life along this model of Christian spiritual growth, of Christian asceticism, and therefore of Christian training, is one in which one must be prepared in a very kind of dark way for participation in suffering. It will be a place where suffering will take place. As we'll see, Benedict modifies these ideas very substantially.